ऋतैर्महद्भिर्य इमाः पुरो विभूः निर्मायशेते यदमूषु पुरुषः भुङ्क्ते गुणान् षोडश षोडशात्मक सोऽलङ्कृशिष्टा भगवान् वचांसि मे। Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, and who in his Purusha incarnation causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of material modes, which are his generator, be pleased to decorate my statements. Purport. As a fully dependent devotee, Shukadeva Goswami, unlike a mundane man who is proud of his own capability, invokes the pleasure of the personality of Godhead so that his statements may be successful and be appreciated by the hearers. The devotee always thinks of himself as instrumental for anything successfully carried out, and he declines to take credit for anything done by himself. The godless atheist wants to take all credit for activities, not knowing that even a blade of grass cannot move without the sanction of the Supreme Spirit, the Personality of Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami therefore wants to move by the direction of the Supreme Lord, who inspired Brahma to speak the Vedic wisdom. The truths described in the Vedic literatures are not theories of mundane imagination, nor are they fictitious, as the less intelligent class of men sometimes think. The Vedic truths are all perfect descriptions of the factual truth without any mistake or illusion, and Shukadeva Goswami wants to present the truths of creation not as a metaphysical theory of philosophical speculation, but as the actual facts and figures of the subject. Since he would be dictated to by the Lord exactly in the same manner as Brahmaji was inspired. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15.15, the Lord is himself the father of the Vedanta knowledge, and it is he only who knows the factual purport of the Vedanta philosophy. So there is no greater truth than the principles of religion mentioned in the Vedas. Such Vedic knowledge or religion is disseminated by authorities like Shukadeva Goswami because he is a humble devotional servitor of the Lord who has no desire to become a self-appointed interpreter without authority. That is the way of explaining Vedic knowledge, technically known as the parampara system or descending process. The intelligent man can see without mistake that any material creation, whether one's own body or a fruit or flower, cannot beautifully grow up without the spiritual touch. The greatest intelligent man of the world or the greatest man of science can present everything very beautifully only insofar as the spirit life is there, or in so much as the spiritual touch is there. Therefore, the source of all truths is the Supreme Spirit, and not gross matter as wrongly conceived by the gross materialist. We get information from the Vedic literature that the Lord himself first entered the vacuum of the material universe, and thus all things gradually developed one after another. Similarly, the Lord is situated as localized Paramatma in every individual being. Hence, everything is done by him very beautifully. The 16 principal creative elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, sky, and the 11 sense organs, first developed from the Lord himself and were thereby shared by the living entities. Thus, the material elements were created for the enjoyment of the living entities. The beautiful arrangement behind all material manifestations is therefore made possible by the energy of the Lord. and the individual living entity can only pray to the Lord to understand it properly. Since the Lord is a supreme entity, different from Shukadev Goswami, the prayer can be offered to him. The Lord helps the living entity to enjoy material creation, but he is aloof from such false enjoyment. Shukadev prays for the mercy of the Lord, not only for being helped personally in presenting the truth, but also for helping others to whom he would like to speak. Please repeat translation.
May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, and who in his Purusha incarnation causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of material modes, which are his generator, be pleased to decorate my statements. Srila Shukadev Goswami is herein invoking the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give him the power to speak the truth, as well as to give the power of his listeners to understand the truth. All truth is coming from Krishna, Janmadya Sharyataha, for he is the absolute truth from whom everything emanates. And therefore, one who wants to represent the truth can only do so by humbling himself to be an instrument of the Supreme Personality of God. Otherwise, if one, due to egoistic attachment, speaks his own idea in the name of truth, we should understand that such a person is simply an instrument of the illusory energy, or Maya. Even when speaking of the Vedic literatures, one gives one's own speculative commentary or his own opinion, it is to be understood that such a commentary is a product of Maya. And such a commentator is an instrument being empowered by the illusory energy. Shukadev Goswami is herein exemplifying a true teacher of Bhagavad Dharma. He is being asked very confidential and sincere questions by Maharaj Parikshit, and he begins his reply by praying to the Supreme Lord, "Let me be an instrument of your mercy. You speak through me. Let me simply repeat what I have heard from my spiritual master, Srila Vedavyas." And this is such an important spiritual principle, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, where the cheating propensity to try to present one's own ideas under the authority of the Vedas, of the previous acharyas, and of God is so rampant. Srila Prabhupada was very, very strong on this principle. Sometimes he would become angry when he would see that people were presenting their own ideas in the name of Bhagavad Gita. And this includes almost everyone who is speaking in Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada would say that if you want to give your ideas to the world, then please just write your own book. Be honest and tell everyone that these are my ideas. These are my opinions. But do not clothe your ideas under the guise of Krishna's words. Bhagavad Gita is for those bhaktas who are surrendered to the Lord and who accept Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa eva yam mayam prokta bhaktosi me shakacheti rahasyam hetat utamam. Krishna tells Arjuna, you can understand this teaching because you are my devotee and my friend. Bhagavad Gita exclusively is meant to be understood by devotees who have the spirit of Arjuna in their approach to this knowledge. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitramitam Uttamam. Arjuna accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Truth, and he surrendered to Krishna. One who accepts Bhagavad Gita in this spirit is a devotee. But one who gives his own ideas of what is Krishna, what is Arjuna, what is Kurukshetra, he is misleading. Misleading himself and misleading others. And therefore we can understand that such a person is simply an instrument in the hands of the illusory energy to bring people farther and farther away from the truth. Even in the name of spirituality, Sanatan Dharma, Hinduism. Shukadev Goswami, Srila Prabhupada is very highly emphasizing, simply repeated the words that he received from Krishna through the disciplic succession. And although Srila Prabhupada performed such an unparalleled accomplishment of spreading the teachings of Gita throughout the entire world, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita has sold more copies than any other edition that has ever been published of Bhagavad Gita in our modern history. Millions and millions of Bhagavad Gitas have been given out. In practically every major language of the world, in practically every nation of the world, and yet he would repeatedly explain to us that my only qualification was that I have simply repeated what I heard from my spiritual master without giving my own opinion, without adding or subtracting anything. Srila Prabhupada could have very easily established himself as God within this movement. In fact, there was a time, it was in 1970 or perhaps 71, when there was a festival in North America, and all the major leaders and devotees from all around assembled at that place. And the most prominent preachers in our whole movement in North America, they all came together in private and decided that esoterically we should understand that the real essence of Srila Prabhupada's teachings is that Prabhupada is the personality of Godhead. and we should worship him as such, and we should teach the devotees to do this. So they were preaching that Prabhupada is Krishna, that he is the avatar. And some of the devotees who were there, most devotees were quite confused, because Srila Prabhupada was always saying that if the guru says he's God, he's dog. And they were saying, but he doesn't say he's God, so he's not dog, but he is God. We say he's God. We must know he's God. We must worship him as God. So some people believed, some people were confused, but there were a couple devotees who inquired from Srila Prabhupada. These are the biggest leaders of our movement. Are they correct? Srila Prabhupada said, they are rascals. In fact, these four sannyasis that spoke this truth, Srila Prabhupada kicked them out of ISKCON. He wanted to show how strongly we must completely reject this idea. He said, you are not allowed to come into any temple, and you are not allowed to preach to any of my devotees. You're out of this movement. We will not tolerate such Mayavad philosophy. And actually, they were just trying to glorify him. Most people, they'd be very happy if someone is glorifying them as God. But Srila Prabhupada was very angry. If he wanted to be glorified as God, he had every opportunity. Leading preachers were ready to do it, and the whole movement was ready to say yes. And then those sannyasis, they realized that they made a big, big mistake. Of course, this was at the very beginning years of our movement. They realized that they misinterpreted Srila Prabhupada's intentions, that because they had the influence of reading other books at other times, they superimposed the ideas of other yogis and other teachers on Prabhupada's teachings, and this is their conclusion. That's when Srila Prabhupada said, do not read any books except my own. Because we get all these other ideas, and then we start trying to combine and mix. Ah, I have read this, I have heard this, and then we superimpose those our ideas on Prabhupada's philosophies, and we come to the wrong conceptions. And then those devotees, they fell at Prabhupada's feet and said, please forgive us. And Srila Prabhupada said, your atonement is you don't come to any temples. You just alone, without anybody, without any help, you just travel and you go to places where nobody's ever gone, and you can start temples there. And if you start them correctly, then you will atone for this offense. So then these devotees, they were just, each one went off on his own, all alone, to places like Texas and Africa and various places. And gradually, they proved to Srila Prabhupada that they genuinely regretted the great mistake that they made. And it was at that time that Srila Prabhupada wrote this pranam mantra. Generally, you do not write pranam mantras for yourself. But Srila Prabhupada wrote it because he wanted to make it very clear to everyone what his purpose was and not allow any other contaminated ideas to ever again come into this movement. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarani. That this disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he's not declaring himself God. He's declaring himself to be the humble servant of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. That's what he always wants to be known as. And his mission was to destroy all the misconceptions of Nirvishesh and Shunyavadi. Avoidist and impersonalistic conceptions of truth. And repeatedly in his books, Srila Prabhupada drives this principle into our hearts, that we are eternally the servants of the Lord, and that the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonalist philosophers claim that ultimately the absolute truth is Brahman. And what is so amazing, especially in this land of India, even so-called bhaktas who chant Harinam, who do japa, who read Ramayana, Bhagavat, who do everything we do externally, their conception is that this is all for the neophytes. When we actually become advanced, when we actually come to that stage of realization, then we go beyond the dualities of the forms of these, and we meditate on the unlimited, infinite, supreme Brahman. This is the last stage. And sometimes such so-called bhaktas, they say, you cannot discuss this with the ordinary people. Don't discuss this, don't even reveal this to the neophyte devotees, because it will only confuse them. Just tell them to, just preach to them to meditate on their Ishtadev, whoever it may be, whether it be Ram or Krishna or Shiva or Ganapati, whoever it may be, meditate on your Ishtadev. Hear the glories, hear the pastimes, do japa, do kirtan, do seva, because you have this body that is prone to action. And let them go on like this. And through this process, gradually, after this whole life, or perhaps many lives, they become so purified, then they can understand the real essence. To become one with your Ishtadev. To enter into that stratum of divinity beyond form, beyond name, beyond distinction, beyond service. Because at that point, through service, you gradually realize that the servant and the service are one. And at that time, there is no service. There is simply bliss. Do you like this philosophy? But they will not tell you this. But when they think you're very advanced, then they will secretly tell you these confidential truths, which are the essence of the scriptures. That the formless supreme, who is omnipotent and beyond all material varieties, in fact, even beyond all spiritual varieties, that absolute truth, out of his causeless mercy, temporarily accepts a form purely in the mode of goodness for the sake of teaching us how to enter into that realm of undifferentiated oneness. How to surrender as a means, but the ends are to become one with the object of your surrender. So therefore, Krishna is God, Ram is God, completely transcendental, completely perfect, completely pure. This they will accept. But it is only a temporary manifestation. And even in the planets of the spiritual world, the Vaikunthas, their interpretation of that is also temporary manifestations of the truth, even beyond this material existence, to gradually, where we can gradually perform more seva, to come to the ultimate position of the spiritual world, which is Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, I am that. So where do these ideas come from? The Srimad Bhagavatam describes that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has three primary energies: the spiritual energy, the material energy, the marginal energy. And when the living entity comes under the misconception that he can be the enjoyer, then the Lord creates the whole material existence just to facilitate that illusion and ultimately to cure that disease. Because Krishna is the only enjoyer. Krishna is the only enjoyer, both past, present, and future. He has always been, he is, and he will always be. And either you're Krishna or you're not Krishna. There is no question of becoming Krishna. Krishna is Krishna. And as the supreme enjoyer, everything and everyone is meant for his enjoyment. Marginal energy means we are meant, we have been created by God to be enjoyed by God. And you may like this position or you may not like this position, but it is your position. On the bodily concept of life, someone may have a certain, be born in a certain race, African race, with a black colored body. One may like it or not like it, but he is. Huh? As long as you're in this body, you cannot change it. You just have to accept the reality of it. That is a temporary designation. But eternally we have a designation. The impersonalists say that all designations are temporary maya. But the scriptures firmly declare, mamayavamso jivaloke jivabhuta shanatana. You have a designation, jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas. You are the eternal servant of Krishna. You are meant for Krishna's enjoyment, and you have been created in that way for all eternity, and you can never change it. And if you accept it, you can enjoy the bliss of God. If you simply accept the position of being enjoyed by Krishna, you can enter into his leela of divine love and enjoy unlimited bliss forever. Because you are also Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But that Satchidananda can only be realized and appreciated and enjoyed when you accept the constitutional position of that Satchidananda, part of Krishna, which is to be enjoyed by Krishna. But when the living entity, by its independent sweet will, desires to be the enjoyer, then there is no place for such a living entity within the spiritual world. So the Lord creates this material existence. And how He creates is being described here by Shukadeva Goswami as Mahavishnu. He first creates Mahatattva, and He generates Ahankar, the false ego, the very, very basis of all bondage and illusion is Ahankar. It is the first created element within this entire cosmic existence. And it is the underlying foundation of this. What you build first in a building is the foundation. And what you build first, the foundation, if you destroy it, then what happens to the rest of the building? It all collapses. Nothing can stand. If you keep the foundation intact, then even if some other parts of the building fall, you just can fix it somehow or other. The roof leaks, then you fix the roof. The walls start to crumble, you just fix the walls. You can keep fixing and repairing and fixing and repairing and keeping the longevity of the building going somehow or other, as long as the foundation is strong. But when there is an earthquake, what happens then? The elements, the wind and the rain and so many elements are trying to disturb the outer parts of the buildings. But when there's an earthquake, it goes right to the foundation. It doesn't even touch. Doesn't touch the roof. Doesn't touch the walls. Doesn't touch the doors or even the floor. The earthquake goes right to the foundation. And what happens? Everything crumbles. It can never be repaired. It is finished forever. So the foundation of all material existence is the false ego. And when we no longer have false ego, then when we no longer live in this material world. There's no longer any material bondage. There's no longer any illusion due to material conceptions. From the false ego, created from that comes the intelligence, then the mind, then the sky, then the air, then fire, then water, then earth. And these 16 elements, the various working organs of the body, the knowledge-acquiring organs of the body, the gross and subtle elements are all created on the basis of false ego. And then the spirit soul, which has no false ego at all, the spirit soul is pure, enters into this whole arena of cosmic suffering only because it has, by its own sweet will, allowed the false ego to cover its true, eternal, pure, humble nature. And this is material suffering. We suffer because we have a false ego. We die. The misconception of death is only because we have this false ego. And what is the false ego? So many jnanis and so many philosophers go through so many incredible descriptions and elaborations and theses and ceremonial rituals, as well as very grand pravachans about what is false ego. But they miss the point. Srila Prabhupada Shukadeva Goswami explains very simply. The false ego means you think you're God. You think you're the enjoyer. And these people, they write volumes and volumes of books about the false ego, and their conclusion is that when you get rid of the false ego, you become God. What does that mean? That means they are very much victims of their own false ego. And all their words are nothing but false ego. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. We are meant for his enjoyment. And we are the eternal servants of Krishna. It's so simple. And when we understand this and we practice that process for this purpose of being cleaned of our false ego, then gradually we could make real spiritual advancement. And that is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. The lives of so many great personalities are being described by Shukadev Goswami. And each of these personalities were those who surrendered their lives in complete sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna. Those who worshipped Krishna and prayed to Krishna as the absolute personality of Godhead. Ishwara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Radhira Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Lord Brahma, he is the secondary creator of this whole universe. Krishna is the ultimate creator. But when Garbhodakshayi Vishnu was laying all alone within this universe, there was nothing except him. There was no one except him. And by his own sweet will, Lord Brahma was born, Atmabhu. And then he empowered Brahma, first by teaching him the reason for this creation, by giving him Vedic knowledge. Brahma actually had the darshan of the Lord after performing tapasya, and he received knowledge of the absolute truth, knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of how the soul is meant to eternally serve Krishna, knowledge of how the material elements are created by Krishna, and he was also given knowledge by the Lord of how to manipulate these material elements to create all of the different forms and species of life within this cosmic universe. So who knows better than Lord Brahma of the origin of creation? We have so many scientists speculating how the universe was created, what happened. Just like so many brothers and sisters may be in the house speculating, how were we born? How is it? What happened? And they can be making so many speculations. Actually, one time, some chemicals in the bathroom fell down and my body came. Gradually the chemicals went into the drain, and in the drain they started mixing, and then there was little worms, and then there was insects, and then there was a bird, and then it was me. That's how it happened. So many speculations they can make. And they can speculate their whole life. But all they have to do is ask their mother and father, how were we born? And the mother and father can say, this is how you were born. We made you, we know. There you go. So Brahma made us. He knows. So we have so many big PhD scholars speculating of the origin of the universe and the origin of life and the evolution of the species. The Brahma tells us, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradhira Govinda Sarva Karanakara. Krishna, his body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. He is not different than his body. It is the source of everything. He is the cause of all causes. And we are all coming from him. And we are all meant for his enjoyment. This is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered the Brahma Samhita such an important scripture. When he found the Brahma Samhita at the Adi Keshava temple in South India, he considered this one of the most important of all literatures for all living beings in this age of Kali Yuga. Because it is the testimony of Brahma, the creator, the grandfather of all of us, of how we have all come about, and what is the reason for living, and who is the origin of everything. Krishna Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajam. Sukadeva Goswami, knowing that Krishna is the cause of all causes, knowing that whatever Krishna speaks is truth, knowing that Krishna is within the heart of every living being, and if it is his will, he can speak the truth through us. And if it is his will, he can give another person the power to understand the truth. This is a very, very wonderful, wonderful phenomena of spirituality. That you can be preaching to someone, but ultimately it is not your preaching that's going to change that person's heart. Because first of all, the only preaching that can possibly change a person's heart in the right way is Krishna's preaching, which is coming through disciplic succession. So if you are simply repeating that message, then your words have the power to change a person's heart. But at the same time, Krishna is within that person's heart. Sarvasya chaham hridishani vishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha. And he's a source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The philosophy of Gita, the philosophy of Bhagavat, it is simply meant to make us remember who we are and what we're supposed to do. And what is our relationship with God. That knowledge is inherent within the soul. This literatures are not presenting some external superimposition on your mind. They are just repeating the truth that is already within your own soul, to help you remember what you are, who you are, and what you know. When a person has amnesia, there's so many ways of gradually explaining to him who he is. You show him pictures. You show him a mirror. This is you. I don't know who that is. And then you start showing him his driver's license. And this is your mother, and this is your father, and gradually, gradually you understand. This is me. So this is what the scriptures are trying to do. Just awaken remembrance of what's within you, which you have forgotten. Why forgotten? Because you're dreaming. You're under the dream of ahankar. You're under the dream that you are the enjoyer. And philosophers are coming and telling you to wake up from one dream and come into a bigger dream. This is an illusion, thinking you're the enjoyer of this material nature. You're actually the enjoyer of the spiritual energy. Another dream. This will not wake you up. So the scriptures and the acharyas, they are coming to just remind us of who we are and what is our relationship with Krishna. But ultimately, it is Krishna in the heart that gives that person the power to understand the words of the scriptures. Unless we are blessed with the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if we hear the absolute truth from the perfect source, we cannot understand. We will come to our own misconceptions. So therefore, Shukadev Goswami is speaking Bhagavatam, not only to Maharaj Parikshit, not only to the sages who have all gathered on the bank of the Ganges, but he is Trikalagya. Shukadev Goswami, by the arrangement of the Lord, he knows past, present, and future. He knows that Vedavyas will compile this discussion and it will be read by people for all of eternity. And he is praying to Krishna. He is praying to Krishna to help those peoples who hear this message from within their heart to understand what he's really speaking, to understand the truth, to remember who they really are. And the great acharyas have taught us, and the scriptures also explain, that when one is favored, when one is favored by the mercy of Krishna's devotee, then Krishna from within the heart is very much inclined to awakening that person's consciousness by which he could hear the message properly. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, what was our qualification for accepting this highest knowledge? Srila Prabhupada said, you have no qualification. I made your qualification. If we have some eagerness to please and serve a great devotee of the Lord, Krishna becomes so pleased by that, that from within the heart, he gives you the power to understand their message. Some inclination. And this is the source of understanding the absolute truth. Advidi pranipatena pari prasnena sevaya. Maharaj Parikshit inquired submissively. And therefore he was a candidate to actually understand and realize the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. We must know that Arjuna approached Krishna with humility. Maharaj Parikshit approached Shukadev Goswami with humility. And humility means I do not know. Karapanya doso pahata svabhava. Please instruct me. The basic foundation of material creation, false ego, can only be destroyed through the process of humility. And humility is very simple to understand. It begins by understanding your eternal position. Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamala Yora Dasa 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 Anudas. But I am not God. I am not the enjoyer. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, and that is my eternal constitutional position. We must be convinced of that reality.
And then the process of bhakti, the 9 paths of devotional service, are meant to teach us how to practically implement that idea in your life. You are the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. How to strive for that. How to aspire to kick out every other desire in your life except that. And how to live practically in this world today in such a way that you will gradually come to that platform of realization. Our aspiration is to be the eternal servant of the servant of the Lord. And the means of attaining that aspiration is to behave as the eternal servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And whenever the demon, the enemy, the anarta of false ego comes up in our life, we have to fight, battle against it by remembering Krishna and by engaging in the service of his servants. For Krishna is none different than his name. And if we have the proper aspiration, Krishna's name will deliver us. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. We chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to be enjoyed by Krishna in his name. The struggle that we are executing in order to chant the name according to our vow, the struggle to try to hear the name, although the mind is so restless due to egoistic contaminations for so many births, that struggle gives Krishna enjoyment. Why? Because it is our expression of wanting to please him. It is an expression of wanting to love him. So don't mind that there's a struggle. Often devotees say, what to do, my mind, whenever I try to chant japa, or whenever I'm in the kirtan, my mind is so much going other places. How many times does preachers hear this question from aspiring devotees? So this is very good. This is a very good chance for you to show that you want to please Krishna. If you want to enjoy, then you let your mind go. But if you want to be enjoyed, if you want to give Krishna enjoyment, then you fight, then you struggle. When Krishna told Arjuna how to please him, he didn't say enjoy. Krishna told Arjuna, you can please me and give me enjoyment by fighting. Not by doing what you like. Similarly, we can please Krishna by fighting our mind. And if we let our mind just take us and we go and enjoy whichever ways the mind takes us, various sense objects, or various dreams, or various aspirations for happiness in this world, then we are again, we're chanting the holy name in the mood of the enjoyer. So therefore, it is not bad that your mind is wandering. As long as you are fighting to bring it back, and bring it back, and bring it back, and bring it back. It's not that Arjuna killed one Kuru and then the whole battle was finished. When Arjuna was trying to reach Jayadratha, there was one Kuru after another, after another, after another. They just kept coming and coming and coming and coming, and each one was a challenge, and each one he had to fight against. It was very difficult. That's the way we have to chant our japa. All these Kuru enemies we have invited into our hearts are all there. And they're all going to come up and say, think of me. Be conscious of me. Worship me. Enjoy me.
And with the arrow of the order of our spiritual master in Krishna, we have to keep shooting him and shooting him. How? What is that arrow? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Whenever these enemies come, we just put our mind on the holy name. Hare Krishna. Like that. It's a fight. And that fight is pleasing to Krishna. We don't chant japa to enjoy, we chant japa to be enjoyed. We don't chant japa for our sense gratification. We chant japa for our purification. And the purification comes when we please Krishna. And we please Krishna when we fight against our mind to keep our mind always faithful and loyal to Him, by concentrating on the sound of His name. And if we chant in this spirit, this is the spirit of humility, then gradually Krishna will be pleased, and from within our very heart He will reveal Himself within His name. And then when we actually give up all conception that I'm the enjoyer, then we can enjoy. But a different kind of enjoyment. When we are utterly surrendered to Krishna's will, then Krishna gives us entrance into His own intimate loving service. And there is eternal transcendental bliss. As long as you want to enjoy, you suffer. Give up your desire to enjoy, try to please Krishna, and you will achieve unlimited bliss. Because Krishna is unlimited bliss. And Krishna only gives Himself to those who are Trinadapi Sunichena Tarodapi Sahishmana Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Is there any questions?
Talking about this conception of I am the God, we have heard many of the classes of big person. Lakhs and lakhs of people used to come to listen to him, and they used to speak what Prabhupada is speaking. In the front way, we just understand it's one and the same, and we do not know it that their intention is that just they wanted to become God or they wanted to enjoy themselves. And we being in the neophyte platform, we do not know it. So how we can discriminate very clearly that this person is having that Mayavadi philosophy or this person is having that consciousness of becoming a servant of the servant of Krishna?
If you cannot discriminate, you should simply hear from those persons who you know are in the parampara that is presenting pure devotional service. If a person is in an authorized line of disciplic succession, we can understand from their origin that this is really the essence of what they speak. Otherwise, you do not know. And unless they blatantly preach Mayavad philosophy, which many will not, even if they're speaking the same thing as what Prabhupada speaks externally, still their words are saturated with the aspiration of their heart. And if their heart is that the ultimate conclusion is to be the enjoyer, to be the supreme, to be God, that means that's the energy that you're receiving in your heart when you hear from them. whatever the words may be. So therefore, it is best to simply read those books and hear from those persons who you are sure about. You should not risk. There's no need to accuse someone that you are like this if you don't know. You just offer your respects to all. But you hear from those who you know are speaking the truth. In the early days, Srila Prabhupada told us, do not read any books except what I have written. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not other books by other authors that are not also teaching pure devotional service, because there are. But there also are not. And unless you're very mature and very highly realized, you cannot discriminate. So if everything is in my books, then you don't require to go to these other places. And you don't know what you are reading or what you are getting. Just like when you take food, you don't know what they put in the food. It may appear like a samosa pakora, but you do not know what type of oil they used. They may have put some fat of chickens in that oil that they cook it. You don't know. In the West, after the slaughtering process, there's all kinds of terrible substances that are just useless. They can't even sell it, so they just make it into oil, and it's the cheapest oil. And people who want to save money, they cook with it. They probably do it in India, too. So how do you know? It may look like a pakora. It may look like exactly like the same pakora that I get at Radha Gopinath's Sunday feast. But it may have something else in it that can make you very sick and can pollute your consciousness. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada explained that if you do not know, you should just become very faithful to hearing from those sources that you know. And that is why we accept a spiritual master who can help give us guidance in this way. There is no need for us to just accuse everyone of being an impersonalist or a Mayavadi. If we don't know, we don't know. Offer all respects. But accept what you know. And if someone is very much endorsed as being, yes, by someone who can discriminate, yes, this book is very good. Yes, this person is pure Vaishnava. Then we can wholeheartedly listen. But a devotee who is not very, very highly mature and spiritually seasoned really cannot discriminate himself. But Srila Prabhupada makes it so clear. Very rarely does anyone preach Bhagavad philosophy so clearly. I mean, Srila Prabhupada, in front of 20,000 people at Cross Maidan, he said, you are not God, you will never be God, you are the eternal servant of God, and if you think you're God, you're a rascal. Huh? How many preachers are so blunt and open about what they really believe? If somebody speaks like that, you could listen. Very nice. But generally, they don't. You hear about Krishna, you hear about Ram, you chant his name, and you've all leelas and all dancing and all songs. But what is the conclusion?
Aham Brahmasmi.
So you do not know. So Prabhupada was very straightforward. You read so many books, so many wonderful stories, and so much wonderful philosophy, but where do they actually come right out like Srila Prabhupada, in almost just jumping? For me, it was very difficult. When I first read Srila Prabhupada's book, he was just, I read many, many books by so many philosophers and so many yogis and so many sages and so many gurus and so many scriptures. And it was all very illuminating and enriching to my consciousness from my perception. But then Srila Prabhupada is just saying, you are not God. If you say you're God, you're dog. Impersonalists are rascals. Huh? God is a person. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, nobody speaks like this. He's calling practically everybody a rascal. Because practically everyone else is an impersonalist. That's obvious. So Prabhupada made it very clear. But most speakers and authors, they don't make it clear what they're really trying to say. What is the final conclusion? So you know what Srila Prabhupada's speaking. You know it's the disciplic succession's conclusion. There's no question. He makes it so simple. So, this is the safe path. The safe path. Does that answer your question? Why Srila Prabhupada was... Actually, Srila Prabhupada loves everyone. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati loves everyone. It's not that he only loves devotees and he doesn't like Mayavadis or impersonalists. He loves everyone. Why they were so strong against impersonalistic ideas? So strong against anyone who denied the eternal form and personality of Godhead. He did that because unless we have that strong conviction that we are eternally the servants of Krishna, and that Krishna's form, his name, his personality are eternal, the absolute truth, we cannot aspire for the right goal in life. We cannot. So Srila Prabhupada was very strong against any other conclusions. Because if he wasn't, there would be no hope for anyone to aspire for the right thing with a clear understanding. And even his own disciples, leading disciples, were claiming him to be God. A conditioned soul, if he had thousands of people ready to worship him as God, he would think, let it be. One very, very famous guru. He's worshipped as God. And one time a very, very powerful Vaishnava, who really knows the Shastras, he approached him and said, are you God or are you not God? Are you God or are you the servant of God? He knew if he said, I am God, he would be totally destroyed by scriptural evidence that he can't be. Because he knew he was talking. He wasn't talking to the general ignorant masses, showing some magic tricks and saying, I'm God. He was talking to a scholar of Vedanta. So he said, I am the servant of God. I am not God. I never told these people to worship me as God, but they are doing.
What can I do? What can I do? They are doing, but I never told them to do like this. So Srila Prabhupada could have said that. But Srila Prabhupada was very merciful. He wanted to establish the real conclusions beyond question of a doubt. As soon as this came, he just considered it a weed that had to be uprooted immediately. Some of his leading disciples, four of the prominent sannyasis in this movement, were convinced that he was God, were propagating as God, and he kicked them out of ISKCON. You're out. You cannot be in this movement. You don't go to any temples. You do not associate with any devotees. It was very strong. Srila Prabhupada had no inclination whatsoever to be God. He wanted to praise Krishna as God. And of course, these sannyasis later came back and they became wonderful servants of his society. But they learned a good lesson. They would never even dream that Prabhupada was God after that. Nor would any of the rest of us. Yes?
Maharaj, there is a tendency amongst devotees after some time to, while giving lectures, to add something what they think as some realizations, which sometimes spontaneously come and may say, which seems fitting, but how to be sure that it is bona fide, and better to just avoid some, just speaking as it is.
The most important thing is that the conclusions must be one with the conclusion of your spiritual master and the previous acharyas. We could, if Krishna gives us a certain intelligence to use certain examples to prove that conclusion, then that is good. But the conclusion must be in line with the words of the previous acharyas. It is best, especially at the beginning, to simply repeat even the examples. And actually, throughout our lives, that is best. The amazing thing, if you read Prabhupada's books, he gives so many examples and so many explanations. And if you go to Jiva Goswami's books, you'll find that most of them are there. Even where Srila Prabhupada is oftentimes just giving examples, which are very famous examples in ISKCON, which are not directly from Gita, but his explanations of how and why, practically all of them are the examples that have been given by the previous acharyas. And even the way he explains things and the descriptions. So that is best. So to simply repeat the words, the stories, the examples, the analogies of the previous acharyas. And to bring certain contemporary reconfirmations to those truths, we can explain some of our own realizations and observations to confirm that. That is also very good. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna.